And on this superbly exciting note, Lina live with you again. I'm Lina Mirmont, your host, with a co-host of Julian Lampert, who kindly found the time to join me. And the show will be a total improvisation. However, some thoughts will be very relevant to our daily life, to the hour and sometimes to the minutes. And picking up on this thought, I would say that dynamic quality of our lives, sometimes so overwhelming and so much of mesmerizing events are taking place, that we are constantly facing the challenge. What is important, what is not, where we can feed our soul, where we can just go by, where we get aggravated, madly, sometimes frustrated, where we can find a little moment of joy, where we can find a moment of intimacy, and where we can have a time with music, art, and wonderful jokes. And if we have enough time away from the internet or our phones, I call them a thumb toys. With all of this in mind, I like to share a few starting thoughts, and then Julian will continue on introducing his, and we also will have some episodes of his music, which will have somewhat fragmented genre, but with enough energy and enough pose that all of us will be renourished and will be fresh to go on with the program. I like to say that I could have a very special event last night with a friend of mine who is a harp player. She is extremely self-conscious, and she actually so self-conscious that she didn't want me to pronounce her name yet, because she feels that she's not ready yet for her performance. But the reason I still mentioning her name is because I was involved in a quite interesting process of practicing. In fact, word practicing is very limited because it is create certain stigma and immediately focusing on some kind of a mechanical limited process. Practice, however, can be obviously somewhat augmented in its meaning. And forgive me if I insult anybody's ear by condemning practicing, because it's such a noble thing and we all afford it. And we do enjoy, especially our children who are practicing at a music instrument or some sport game and etc. So this lady and I shared a very interesting conversation which had to do with the process of practicing. I will not go into all great details because we really have a program of thoughts, I should say, and some program of ideas. And Julian Lampert certainly will make his contribution to this. So it will be a dialogue exchange of some perhaps even unfinished thoughts or some bit wild thoughts. We are just trying to have this multicolored dialogue. So coming back to my recollection of the conversation with this very talented young harpist, I need to say that it's somewhat very intriguing how such a huge instrument could be under control of two lovely small hands. It's extremely poetic, transparent, gentle, and radiant sound, which probably can connect us to one of the best impressionistic painting. But coming back to the practicality of it, I ask her, how does she really feel so well coordinated, and how did she start to practice as a child? And I was quite astonished by her answer, because the answer was that she doesn't remember. It just was inseparable harmony between herself and the body of the instrument. This is very fortunate, because it's quite rare when practice is truly not a labor, when it becomes a very harmonious merging process between the musician, in her situation it was a young girl, and the music instrument. But I was fascinated because the instrument is quite large in size, and if any of you know a little bit about symphony orchestra, know that the harp is not always actually present in the orchestra, and my son will correct me if I made a brutal mistake, but to make my own recollection, I must say that it is a very exceptional presence of this instrument, because it has its own very individual, not easily merging sound with other string instruments, and it has its own certain position and certain function. This young lady does not imagine herself in a huge orchestra. She does present herself as a soloist. And on this note, I like to make a little turn and to ask Julian's opinion regarding a philosophical and practical measure in between feeling ourselves in this very complex world as a soloist or part of the huge orchestra. So, departuring from this story of a fantastic musician whom I hope to interview one time, I'm addressing this that point, and in a nutshell, Julian, how we can visualize where the parameters, where the juice of individuality and part of the society comes from.
Well, that's as you usually do, you ask a very loaded question.
Well, you had a good lunch.
Yes, I did indeed. It's a lot easier to do that in music than it is in life, because you can sometimes make beautiful music with a musician, whom, or I should say with a person who you can't stand and just absolutely can't tolerate and be in the same room with, but who happens to be also a fantastic musician. So you may not meet in life, but in art and music, you meet face to face and live very happily with the music together. We sometimes wonder how is that possible? How can musicians who cannot stand each other manage to make beautiful music together? But as soon as the music ends, they can't wait to get the next ticket as far away as possible from the people that they played with. And I think people would be surprised to know how extremely common that is, that kind of situation. And and musicians, and it's not just within music. these kinds of situations exist in the workplace also. It's very common to hate your coworker or your colleague, but you're forced to work under the same roof, and it makes life very, very difficult. But that's actually, I think that's a more difficult situation because you're communicating with this person whom you dislike on very practical, day-to-day kinds of, you're communicating on these very day-to-day practical kinds of ways, and there's really no escaping that. You're communicating through words and through instructions, and it's a very active, concrete back-and-forth kind of communication that does not leave much room for imagination doesn't leave room for anything other than what's being talked about. How much did you count up in that account? Or my printer isn't working. Can you help me fix it? Or other practical kinds of questions in the workplace. But with music, with music, we speak a more abstract language, and somehow it's a lot easier to communicate in that language. And getting back to your question, playing as a soloist or playing together with other people.
Not only playing, but living as well, which actually you touched upon just a few seconds before. I made that parallel because when you're playing as a soloist, this is very well-defined role if you choose to play as a soloist. But what happens in your mind and in your soul when you're forced to make a decision in life whether you are the soloist or you are part of the society? Understanding, of course, you have to do both inevitably, but there are certain leaders and certain individuals who are indeed trying to be more soloist and trying to take this courageous role to be the leader. So this loaded question, which you already partly answered, has to do with internal collaboration of being a soloist as a leader or being a part of our complex society. How does it work together?
Well, I think it works if the people who are involved realize that whatever they are doing, whether it's in music or in the workplace, the project that they're working on is bigger than they are. And that can be a very difficult thing to overcome because on the other hand, I have my convictions about how something is done, and another person will have convictions that are no less stronger. So it's not an easy balance to maintain, and the question is, your question is answered much easier on paper than in day-to-day living. However, I think what often happens is that when there is a conflict of some kind between colleagues who have to present a project or have to present a concert, the deadline, the approaching date of the presentation or of the concert is really what makes everything, so to speak, explode on the table. And when the fighting, the bickering, the disagreements continue for a long time, people realize perfectly well that there's only so much time that they can permit themselves being in these conflicts, and the fact that they're in such huge disagreements is not going to call off the concert or call off the presentation.
It is quite a profound answers. I wanted to thank you because I asked this in a very broad way, but you certainly baked a very tasty, clear cake, because you definitely introduced very objective measure of project and time. I will only add tiny little thing, which in life takes a huge big thing, is the ego. So that is something we all understand, we all know, but the issue still unfortunately rotates always around it. I, however, wanted to thank you again because the points which you did bring up automatically answering a lot of issues, concrete project and concrete time frame. We're going to have the first episode of our musical break, and I just like to stretch a little bit the thought after our next after this break to our next fragment, which indeed will give an example where the leader and the member of the company became extremely important in our today's economy life, and his role will be quite something to watch. We are ready to listen to music, Julian? We are. The yeah. name of it, or so it's just a little intermezzo?
Yes, it's...
It's just a little improvisation in the mood of this northeastern pre-spring winter weather that we're having.
I'm not going to hide my subjectivity because obviously I know you as a composer for so many, many years. And I wanted to make sure that this truly magnificent piece of most eloquent spiritual musical gesture will be just the beginning for perhaps a full size of a spring poem. Just so incredibly eloquent in the harmony and, mostly important, in a flowing, natural, melodic wave. I thank you for that. And thankfully, we will hear more of that during the course of our program. I'm going to stretch my thought to a concrete example where what we just discussed regarding the role of the balance between being a leader and being a member of the society at the same time, I'd like to make one example and to bring to your attention quite an outstanding event. Maurice R. Hank Greenberg, former chief executive of American International Group, as we all know, AIG, launched a legal challenge to the government's 2008 takeover of AIG, alleging the move was unconstitutional. It was quite a revealing, very detailed and memorable interview in between Mr. Greenberg and Charlie Rose. And what particularly moved me is the human environment. Because if we will put on the side all complexity of the economic crisis which took place several years ago and we still feel consequences of it, if we also will be free from analyzing all difficulties in the connection between economy and human development, if we will forget about the dollars and cents and will make just a sense out of the presence, character, and bravery of Mr. Greenberg, I believe that we will have a tremendous field for thinking and for some realization what kind of human courage one has to express being inside of the company, inside of the group of people who are sharing your point of view. Relating something to what Julian said, where a group of people have to come to the certain conclusion by making conscious decision, struggling through arguments, disagreements, fights, etc. They, however, are human being. And what's impressed me deeply that Mr. Greenberg and his 80th is functioning as if he was in his 30th or 40th. He has such an incredible stamina. I would not even call it a professional. I would not even call it as a professional power, because it is so self-evident. I would call it a wisdom where he feels not only very committed to his cause, to his role in the American economy, but he feels that his role in a society is somewhat is irreplaceable, because he is totally committed to fight for his rights, for the rights of his colleagues, and stand by constitutional rights. I believe that Fifth Amendment of Constitution was not followed, was not honored, and that was the cause for these legal issues. Julian is younger. Julian is much more American than myself. Julian certainly has a very sharp perception of how musicians are functioning in this highly commercial world. I like to ask his comments about, ask for his comments, to ask his very personal subjective opinion about what he heard in this interview. I was very fortunate to hear this with my son. And then after this, I would not hide, we did have some exchanges, and we certainly had some thoughts which prompted us to follow these lawsuits, which will keep us all busy for perhaps even number of years. Julian, you are you expressed last night some feedback hearing this conversation between Hank Greenberg and Charlie Rose. I'd like you to share with our audience now what was most impressive and most meaningful to you.
I wished I could understand more of the specifics of what happened. I mean, in terms of the technical language, and there was a lot that I did not understand. However, I was completely stunned to understand what I did manage to understand. And the interview with Maurice Greenberg, otherwise known as Hank Greenberg, who was the former CEO of American International Group, he wrote a book. And this book is called The Story of AIG. And basically, Charlie Rose was interviewing Mr. Greenberg about this book. And Mr. Greenberg wrote this book to give a detailed account of exactly what, in fact, happened with AIG as it collapsed. And what was just incredibly shocking to hear was that Mr. Greenberg gave very high recommendations for certain people in order for them to become members of his company's board. And then the very same people had voted him out of the company, basically threw him out. And that kind of betrayal is not new. But what was really shocking to me was that that such a betrayal, which happened on such an incredibly high level, was in fact the reason for the collapse of this company. And in other words, what I understood for myself was that the company's collapse did not really have much to do with money and the numbers at the heart of the issue. The huge amounts of money lost came as a result of this extraordinary betrayal, and it came as a result of a terrible set of circumstances that in fact had nothing to do with money and had everything to do with loyalty. And Mr. Greenberg was convinced that if he had remained with the company, that AIG would never have collapsed, because as long as he was at the helm, the company flourished. And when they kicked him out, the company collapsed. So in that sense, it's a very straightforward picture from the outside. But from the inside, Mr. Greenberg paints an extraordinary picture of what in fact happens behind the scenes, blow by blow, detail by detail, what happens behind the scenes of a giant, prominent company that collapses. So for me, this was a towering example of how the economic collapse occurred for reasons that began with things that had nothing whatsoever to do with numbers or money, and had everything to do with a decay, with a total collapse of a certain system of human values, and when that collapsed, everything else was doomed to failure. So that was why I was, and I'm still am under very profound impression of what Mr. Greenberg said. And what's really amazing also is that he was sitting with Charlie Rose, looking unbelievably well. I mean, it's not possible to guess that this is an 87-year-old man. He looks incredibly well. He has charisma, extraordinary vitality, and he looks like he can run the world. It's just really sensational. So I'm sure that the people who suffered were around him were quite heavily punished by the sins that they committed against this great man, and in the end he really became victorious. So I hope that his book really flourishes, and that somehow he'll have a new beginning.
I think his book is flourishing already. Thank you for your comments, and I would move to the next subject after we will have a pleasure of another musical interlude. But I just wanted to make sure that the last thought will be connected to our first thought after this musical break, and that was the statement which this extraordinary human being already made, and so to speak, have a second breath for life. Julian, I think we're ready for another musical moment, and that will be?
This is something a little more energetic.
Wow. Do I need to comment on this? I think I will be foolish. Speaks and flourishing for itself. Thank you. We're moving from Mr. Greenberg and wishing him and his colleagues to get to point of some resolution. And I like to get to another thought, which is rather sad one, but a very realistic one, which came to me after I heard this interview, that we living in a society where people are afraid to speak the truth. It's almost as if you have to have enough money to express a to express some thoughts, contradictions, something which will put you against the society. So you're becoming a negative individualist, as I would say. And very few people would take this position without having a bright sum of money in the bank. So I like to ask Julian again, having him as an American with certain accomplished life, how do you think society would be able, if not overcome, but to balance this situation where we can truly use the power of democracy and speak our mind, or we are stuck in fear for a number of years because of the complexity of our times?
I don't think we should be stuck in fear, and I think that we're already doing better than we have than we were 2, 3, 4 years ago. But things are still going to be difficult for a while because our society made some very serious mistakes, and those mistakes don't get cleared up overnight.
I will take a bit issue. I think mistakes is simplification. I think it's a development which is unavoidable. Society is going through. I even made a little bit of a parallel between famous music form ABA, where A is introduction, B is a development, and then A is repetition, but on a different level. I think when a huge B section, where all elements are developed, having their own suspension, collision, and conflicts. So forgive me for my interruption, but I just felt that it is called for it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I understand what you're saying. I meant more in terms of the economic collapse, and that collapse happened because of the incredible greed and terrible mistakes that the banks made. So, yes, I see what you're saying, and yes, we're definitely going through a kind of development, evolutionary kind of phase. That I hope we are, and from my sense, it feels like we are. But in the long run, I think one of the things that is happening is that the concept of freedom is being reevaluated, and that's among the things that will take still a while to play out its course. People have a very very mistaken notion of what freedom is, because people want freedom, but they don't understand the responsibility that comes with that freedom, and basically they want to have freedom without the responsibility. If I want to, if I suddenly feel the urge to run outside and sing a song that I love passionately and I want to express to everyone my joy and sing my heart out to everyone, this song that I have, I may be disturbing someone by doing that. Maybe someone else is also, some other people are outside and they don't want to hear what I have to sing. They want peace and quiet. They went outside to have some peace, and they mean the last thing that they want to have is a disturbance from a person who doesn't want to kill anyone. All he wants to do is just to sing really loud. So that's a very simple example, but actually it's an example that I think cuts right to the chase of what's happening, because I've noticed many, many times people getting overly annoyed at being reproached by others for doing really a similar kind of thing to what I was just saying. Another example is, and it's an example I remember very clearly. It's from real life. When I was at the airport and I was going through the customs check, and there was a woman, an elderly lady who was dressed very lavishly, and the security people were examining her, and she was, and they were examining her very civilly, and there was nothing inappropriate with what they were doing, and she created such an outrageous scene. It was so shameful, so just absolutely deplorable. And she yelled out that there is no way that you can take away my manicure set. She basically acted as if her life was being taken away from her. And she should have known better, because this was not long after the terrorist attacks of September 11th, and she didn't have to have her manicure set confiscated. She could have put it in her suitcase. Anyway, I remember seeing many instances like that of people just simply being very spoiled, and it's interesting that. That this is something that we think of generally as being a problem with younger people, but I think it's absolutely across the board, and people just the bottom line is that there needs to be a sharper common sense between being very responsible, but that doesn't mean being imprisoned. But also having an internal openness, a freedom, less internal repression, and being free does not mean exposing yourself all the time in public. There is a balance, and it really should not be that difficult to find that balance. But it seems like, especially in the last 10 years, that people have really lost their sense of proportion between freedom and responsibility.
We're going to follow with another wonderful piece of music, Turn. I just wanted to add that you certainly made a practical point there are trends in behavior which you said is a spoiled one, absolutely correct. But we cannot certainly diminish a more profound issue which has to do with a confusion, which has to do with a total reorientation and relearning of new principles of our society. People less communicate. It's a vicious cycle because with a more of a social media computer and, as I call, thumb toys, there is less and less personal communication, which is indeed in a very high speed, unnoticeably for people themselves, creating isolation, create a distance. And you brought a number of the examples. I just will finish with another one, which is a funny one. A family of five people, parents and three children, came to the restaurant, and waitress came to take their order, and they wanted to place the order using their cell phones. They didn't speak, and she was totally puzzled, and it was a real story. So how much of the digital mentality we are permitting to have, or we're already in hands of, and how much of the most natural human communication we need to restore? So whatever is natural now became digital, and whatever is digital should become somewhat natural. I think that on this note, we will try to find some answers in Julian's another piece of music. Julian, are you ready? And what kind of episode and image we're going to hear?
I will not even attach any title or verbal image. Let's just hear what will happen.
And we continue our program. This is Lena Live. I'm Lena Mirmont with my co-host Julian Lampert. We had a little break here after his absolutely glorious piece of music. I comment on the fact that we had some truly romantic atmosphere with a quite dynamic harmonic shifts. And I ask the question, which frankly I didn't want to ask, but I'm asking it anyhow out of curiosity. And the reason I didn't want to ask this question, because interfere with the concrete into the magic world of abstract is very, very tough things to do. So I hope Julian will rescue me from this and tell me how this magnificent piece of music had its birth.
You know, I can't really answer that. it played itself. That's really the best I can say.
And thank you for your sincerity. That's actually what usually happens, and I'm glad that it did happen this time as well. I'd like to introduce, Dave, a few little practical subjects: what we eat, what we drink, what we love, what we hate. We are having this show with quite an exotic concoction. And that concoction has a little bit of berries juice. It has a well-known orange juice. It does have a drop of champagne because I'm not planning to drive. But also, it has something which I normally would not be brave to put. It has a drop of chocolate hazelnut milk. With all of this in mind, I'm asking question, Julian, what is your feeling about this juice? And what does it remind you of?
Well, it's actually incredibly tasty. I can't really say I can't really say that it reminds me of anything in particular, because the cocktail is so original, and it's unlike any kind of well-known cocktail that most of us are used to. But the fact that it has champagne, and it also has an incredible dose of antioxidant supplemental compounds, makes it gives it an edge that you don't get with other cocktails, because you're mixing some pleasant alcohol pleasure with some incredibly healthy, invigorating, life-affirming energy.
That's why you write such a music, fast and expressive.
Yeah.
Coming back to a little bit a more simple health taste, I found out that if you come home very late and you have to have late meal, well-known chamomile tea is fantastic. But if you add a little bit of ginger, and when I'm talking about the ginger, I really mean not the ginger drink, but regular ginger, which you cut and boil for a few minutes, and then you put maybe a teaspoon into this well-known chamomile tea. And if that will not be palatable enough, just take a little bit of the honey. That combination also will give peace to your stomach, mind, and hopefully wonderful dreams. And I like to finish our program with actually, I think we have one more music with one thought that our very different experiences in life create different dreams. And some of us remembering those dreams, some of us don't. There is a medical and physiological reasons for this, subject we will leave for the specialist. However, the music which we're going to hear is certainly represents some kind of a dream, which I hope you will have this coming night after this program. Thank you. quite an interesting, searching, slightly unstable piece of music. I think it easily can correlate to our dreams. Our dreams have our own personal real life experience with a little cloudness, uncertainty, and individuality. That was our program, which I will end with gratitude to BBS, whose ears, souls, experience, and tastes help us all. And I hope that the thoughts which we expressed will lead to our next program, which will be in a couple of weeks. And I wanted to thank you for your intellectual patience to our program, and hope that you develop your own thoughts. It's a calling-in show. Perhaps more of you will be enlightened and to call us next time in a couple of weeks at the same time. And that was another edition of Lena Live. I'm Lena Mirmont.
And I'm Julian Lampert. Thanks very much for everyone joining us this afternoon. We'll see you next time in 2 weeks on Tuesday. That's 1 o'clock Pacific time in California and the western part of the country, and 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. This is Julian Lena signing off. Until then.